Naki read the message again, just in case there was some highly subtle detail that threw the entire thing into a different, more benign light. Then she snapped shut the fan with a sense of profound fury. She placed it back where it was, exactly as it had been. Mina pushed her head through the hermetic curtain. "How's it coming along?"
"Fine,"
Naki said. Her voice sounded drained of emotion even to herself. "Got that routine cobbled together?"
"Coming along," Naki said.
"Something the matter?"
"No,"
Naki forced a smile.
"No, just working through the details. Have it ready in a few minutes."
"Good. Can't wait to start the sweep. We're going to get some beautiful data, sis. And I think this is going to be a significant node, maybe the largest this season. Aren't you glad it came our way?"
"Thrilled," Naki said, before returning to her work.
30 specialized probes hung on telemetric cables from the underside of the gondola, dangling like the venom-tipped stingers of some grotesque aerial jellyfish. The probes sniffed the air meters above the juggler biomass, or skimmed the fuzzy green surface of the formation. Weighted plumb lines penetrated to the sea beneath the raft, sipping the organism-infested depths dozens of meters under the node. Radar mapped larger structures embedded within the node, dense kernels of compacted biomass, or huge cavities and tubes of implacable function, while sonar graphed the topology of the many sinewy organic cables which plunged into darkness, umbilicals anchoring the node to the seabed. Smaller nodes drew most of their energy from sunlight and the breakdown of sugars and fats in the sea's other floating microorganisms, but the larger formations, which had a vastly higher information processing burden, needed to tap belching aquatic fissures, active rifts in the ocean bed kilometers under the waves. Cold water was pumped down each umbilical by peristaltic compression waves, heated by being circulated in the superheated thermal environment of the underwater volcanoes, and then pumped back to the surface. In all this sensing activity, remarkably little physical harm was done to the extended organism itself. The biomass sensed the approach of the probes and rearranged itself so that they passed through with little obstruction, even those scything lines that reached into the water. Energy was obviously being consumed to avoid the organism sustaining damage, and by implication the measurements must therefore have had some effect on the node's information processing efficiency. The effect was likely to be small, however, and since the node was already subject to constant changes in its architecture, some probably intentional and some probably forced on it by other factors in its environment, there appeared to be little point in worrying about the harm caused by the human investigators. Ultimately, so much was still guesswork. Although the swimmer teams had learned a great deal about the pattern juggler's encoded information, almost everything else about them, how and why they stored the neural patterns, and to what extent the patterns were subject to subsequent post-processing, remained unknown. And those were merely the immediate questions. Beyond that were the real mysteries, which everyone wanted to solve, but were simply beyond the scope of immediate academic study. What they would learn today could not be expected to shed any light on those profundities. A single data point, even a single clutch of measurements, could not usually prove or disprove anything. But nonetheless, it might later turn out to play a vital role in some chain of argument, even if it was only in the biasing of some statistical distribution closer to one hypothesis than another. Science, as Naki had long since realized, was as much a swarming social process as it was something driven by ecstatic moments of personal discovery. It was something she was proud to be part of. The spiral sweep continued uneventfully, the airship chugging around in a gently widening circle. Morning shifted to early afternoon, and then the sun began to climb down toward the horizon, bleeding pale orange into the sky through soft-edged cracks in the cloud cover. For hours, Naki and Mina studied the incoming results, the ever-sharper scans of the node appearing on screens throughout the gondola. They discussed the results cordially enough, but Naki could not stop thinking about Mina's betrayal. She took a spiteful pleasure in testing the extent to which her sister would lie,
deliberately forcing the conversation around to Dr. Sivaraksa and the project he steered. "I hope I don't end up like one of those deadwood bureaucrats," Naki said when they were discussing the way their careers might evolve. "You know, like Sivaraksa." She observed Mina pointedly, yet giving nothing away. "I read some of his old papers. He used to be pretty good once, but now look at him." "It's easy to say that," Mina said. "But I bet he doesn't like being away from the front line any more than we would. But someone has to manage these big projects. Wouldn't you rather it was someone who'd at least been a scientist?" "You sound like you're defending him. Next you'll be telling me you think the moat is a good idea." "I'm not defending Sivaraksa," Mina said. "I'm just saying..." She eyed her sister with a sudden glimmer of suspicion. Had she guessed that Naki knew? "Never mind. Sivaraksa can fight his own battles. We've got work to do." "Anyone would think you were changing the subject," Naki said. But Mina was already on her way out of the gondola to check the equipment again. At dusk, the airship arrived at the perimeter of the node, completed one orbit, then began to track inward again. As it passed over the parts of the node previously mapped, time-dependent changes were highlighted on the displays. Arcs and bands of red superimposed against the lime and turquoise false color of the mapped structures. Most of the alterations were minor, a chamber opening here or closing there, or a small alteration in the network topology to ease a bottleneck between the lumpy subnodes dotted around the floating island. Other changes were more mysterious in function, but conformed to types seen in other studies. They were studied at enhanced resolution, the data prioritized and logged. It looked as if the node was large, but in no way unusual. Then night came, as swiftly as it always did at those latitudes. Mina and Naki took turns sleeping for 2 or 3 hour stretches, while the other kept an eye on the readouts. During a lull, Naki climbed up onto the top of the airship and tried the antenna again, and for a moment was gladdened when she saw that a new message had arrived. But the message itself turned out to be a statement from the Snowflake Council stating that the blackout on civilian messages would continue for at least another 2 days, until the current crisis was over. There were allusions to civil disturbances in 2 cities, with curfews being imposed, and imperatives to ignore all unofficial news sources concerning the nature of the approaching ship. Naki wasn't surprised that there was trouble, though the extent of it took her aback. Her instincts were to believe the government line. The problem, from the government's point of view, was that nothing was known for certain about the nature of the ship, and so by being truthful they ended up sounding like they were keeping something back. They would have been far better off making up a plausible lie, which could be gently molded toward accuracy as time passed. Mina rose after midnight to begin her shift. Naki went to sleep and dreamed fitfully, seeing in her mind's eye red smears and bars hovering against amorphous green. She had been staring at the readouts too intently for too many hours. Mina woke her excitedly before dawn. "Now I'm the one with the news," she said. "What? Come and see for yourself." Naki rose from her hammock, neither rested nor enthusiastic. In the dim light of the cabin, Mina's fungal patterns shone with peculiar intensity, abstract, detached shapes that only implied her presence. Naki followed the shapes onto the balcony. "What?" she said again, not even bothering to make it sound like a question. "There's been a development," Mina said. Naki rubbed the sleep from her eyes. "With the node?" "Look, down below, right under us." Naki pressed her stomach hard against the railing and leaned over as far as she dared. She had felt no real vertigo until they had lowered the sensor lines, and then suddenly there had been a physical connection between the airship and the ground. But was it her imagination, or had the airship lowered itself to about half its previous altitude, reeling in the lines at the same time? The midnight light was all spectral shades of milky gray. The creased and crumpled landscape of the node reached away into mid-gray gloom, merging with the slate of the overlying cloud deck. Naki saw nothing remarkable, other than the surprising closeness of the surface. "I mean really look down," Mina said. Naki